I worked for this company called Major League Softball, and what we did is we score kept softball games. I never even knew how big this industry was, and that this was like life for some people. But after a few months working there, I became like the manager of certain leagues, and this was pretty high tech back then. We score kept the games on computers. We brought out these laptops, and you had to type in like rev.slash, you know, whatever. That's how you used to have to log on to those computers. Well, one night I walked out to the game, or to the games, and one of my scorekeepers, a young college girl, same age as I was, but she's out there and she's just bawling. And so I said, "Joelle, what's up?" And she says, "So messed up. I'm totally off," which is like serious stuff if you know these guys. Because at the end of the game, they want the printout. They want to know, "Hey, I went 4-for-4 in slow pitch and softball." You know, whatever it is. And so she's just upset and bawling. And I said, "Well, who's up to bat?" She's like, "I don't know. It's not matching." I'm like, "Okay, don't panic. Get out a piece of paper, and I want you to start recording what's going on." So I walked over to the manager. I said, "Hey, I just want to check notes with you of what you have." And so I had his line up, and I said, "What did Joe do when he batted?" So I reconstructed the game, talking to that guy, and then I said, "Well, you know, what did Tom do?" "Well, Tom didn't show up." "Oh, yeah, that's why she's off, because, and so I came back, and I deleted the game that she had and re-entered the game, and by the grace of God, at some point I said, "Now batting Tom Smith," and, "Okay, good, we're on track, we're good." And she goes, "Wow, that was really good. How'd you do that?" I said, "Oh, I've messed this up so many times, that's why they gave me this job. It's because I've messed it up enough, I know how to fix it." And I said, "Now here's the thing. It's okay to get frustrated, it's okay to make mistakes, it's okay to completely mess this up, but there's one thing you can't do. You can't just sit there and do nothing. You got to move forward." And that's true in our spiritual lives. And that's a reality here. You are free to mess up here. And even like say, "Okay, I got to sit down. I got to regroup." But what we're going to do is encourage you to say, "Okay, you messed up. Let's get back in the game." And I think that really applies to what we're talking about here. We're doing a sermon series on how to be rich. And if you've been around, we're not talking about how to get rich. Fact is you are already rich. You're up there. You compare yourself to the rest of the world. We've got the 2% right here this morning. And our key passage is 1 Timothy 6:17-19. And says, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need. Always be ready to share with others." So these next 2 weeks, we're going to focus in on that last part there in verse 18. Where it says, "Tell them to use their money for good, and that they should be rich in good works and generous to those in need." And last couple weeks, we talked about changing our mindset. We talked about kind of like the theology behind money, what have you. But today, we're going to get really practical in these next 2 weeks on how are we practically speaking, how do we become generous? Should I just pull this? Is it bothering anyone else or just me? Okay, it's just me. Okay, me and Kenneth. All right. So in the next 2 weeks, I want to talk about two things that hinder us from being generous. Because I'm guessing most of you would say, "Yeah, I'd like to be generous." Yeah, most? Okay. One of you. But there's typically two things that hinder us from being generous. One we're going to talk about next week, and that's fear. And the other thing that hinders us is debt. It's kind of like, "Yeah, I'd like to move forward, but I've got this problem here. I'm pulling this extra wagon here, and what do I do?" Well, let me give you a little bit of background in case you were like deceived to think that that I have it all together and I've always had it all together. Either one of those deceptions, let me just like totally crush all of that today. Here's the number one reason why I think I'm qualified to talk about getting out of debt is I know what it's like to be there. I'm like that college girl that's like, it's all messed up. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this. So let me back you up 20 plus years where I'm this single father raising my son by myself. I have over $30,000 in credit card and what are those fun things? Consolidation loan debt. That's not really good. We're not talking about things that are like really good assets. We're not talking about home debt or any of those types of things. And so I'm in this spot. I'm a young Christian at this point, trying to figure out, okay, so what does it mean to repent? To say, okay, my life's not really where it should be when I look at this. How do I go forward? And I don't know if you've ever been in that place where you get those friendly phone calls at night where they say, "Oh, Mr. Winters, this is your final notice that, you know, we're going to come," and I'm like, "What? Take the stuff I don't have?" And so I'd get those letters and what have you, and I'm at this place where like maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but I think it's an oncoming train. This is not good. What do I do? And I had people that said, you know, hey, you just need to file for bankruptcy. You're in way over your head. And so I felt like God was telling me to do something else. Because I started to pray about this, and I don't know if it's the voice of God or if it's me, but I kind of felt like God said, it's time for you to man up. It's time for you to honor your commitments. It's time for you to move forward here, and you don't know what to do, so go talk to some godly people. Let's move forward. Well, I talked to some godly people, and I came up with a game plan. And here's the reality. 2 years from having that conversation, I was debt-free. Paid off over $30,000 in debt. And so I'm going to get super practical and just kind of walk through, okay, how did you pay off $30,000 debt in 2 years? And it's not just a matter of how do I get up pay off this debt, but it's one of those things where you go, okay, you know what? I can actually do the things God has called me to do. I can be generous. I can glorify God. And not only that, I mean, if you've ever been in debt, I'm going to guess you know that tug. It's kind of like a slavery, you know, where you're going, man, I don't like this. In fact, and if I just pay these minimum payments that they're doing, I'll die before I actually pay these guys off. I mean, that was just a reality I came to. And I found out I'm not alone. Average U.S. family carries over $15,000 in credit card debt. I had those guys beat. Better than average. How do you like that? The percentage of delinquent debt in America is 35% of the people. 35% of the people. That's one, two, three. Every third person is in delinquent debt. Probably not here. Americans who believe that they're always going to have debt. That's 20%. I was surprised. I figured that number would be higher. Percentage of Americans that are over 65 that are paying off debt and believe this is 31%. Which means there's a bunch of people that are just saying, this is the way life is, and I'm going to die with this debt. And the thing I think that's sad about this is I think for most people, there's something we can do about it. For most people, we can get out of debt. And it's not going to be easy, but I think it's like anything in life. It requires us to be intentional. Intentional and move forward and be purposeful. The Bible says this, Proverbs 21:5. It says, good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. So I don't have a, you know, Most people would say 2 years was a quick time. I was thinking quick time would be like 2 months. But this isn't a quick thing, but it's about diligence. And a lot of spiritual disciplines are that way, right? Where you just practice it. You move forward, and those days where you go, I don't feel like reading the Bible. Well, you move forward in diligence, and God works through you. So we're going to get real practical. I'm going to give you 5 steps. The first step's a little tricky to explain, so I brought in some experts, and I got a video to explain my first point.
I just can't get these numbers to add up.
Like we're never going to get out of this hole.
The credit card debt, does it ever end?
Maybe I can help. We sure could use it.
We've tried debt consolidation companies.
We've even taken out loans to help make payments.
Well, you're not the only ones. Did you know millions of Americans live with debt they cannot control? That's why I developed this unique new program for managing your debt. It's called Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford.
Let me see that. If you don't have any money, you should not buy anything. Sounds interesting.
Sounds confusing.
I don't know, Mike. This makes a lot of sense. There's a whole section here on how to buy expensive things using money you save.
Give me that. And where would you get this saved money? I tell you where and how in Chapter 3.
Okay, what if I want something but I don't have any money?
You don't buy it? Well, let's say I don't have enough money to buy something. Should I buy it anyway? No. Now I'm really confused.
It's a little confusing at first.
Well, what if you have the money? Can you buy something?
Yes.
Now take the money away. Same story?
Nope. You shouldn't buy stuff when you don't have the money. I think I got it. I buy something I want, and then hope that I can pay for it, right? No. You make sure you have money, then you buy it. Oh, then you buy it. But shouldn't you buy it before you have the money? No.
Why not?
It's in the book. It's only 1 page long. The advice is priceless, and the book is free.
Wow, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, we can put it on our credit card. So get out of debt now. Write for your free copy of Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford. And if you order now, you'll also receive Seriously, If You Don't Have the Money, Don't Buy It, along with a 12-month subscription to Stop Buying Stuff magazine. So order today.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny, but that was like one of these like mind-blowing things when I first, you know, and there's your first, stop spending money you don't have. And that's one of these realities. If I want to stop the bleeding, I got to do something to stop that. And Proverbs 12:9 says this. It says, better to be a nobody and yet have a servant. Have a servant then pretend to be somebody and have no food. In other words, don't spend that money you don't have. Don't do something. And here's a reality from my experience. If you're in a serious amount of debt, it's going to take a radical commitment to stop spending money you don't have. And by radical, I mean that's where you take out like the credit card and cut it in half. That's what I did. It didn't matter. They weren't going to take those credit cards anyway. So it was kind of symbolic when I cut them up. I mean, but seriously, you pay cash. You buy things that you only have the money. And it may be one of those things where you go, okay, what are the extras in my life? Is it you know I get a latte here. Get my nails done. Hadn't done that. Restaurants, cables, movie, gym. You know, what is it in my life that I may have to cut out? And you may think I was a little bit crazy. People thought I was crazy at the time when I came to this conclusion. Okay, I'm going to do everything I can, and I'm going to get out of debt. I turned off the cable, and I just had people saying, "Well, what's your son going to do?" Do you know he could do things other than watch cable TV? And did you know you could go to the library and you can actually rent movies or not rent them, but you can check them out for free. Like, I mean, you can give them your credit card if you want, but it's totally free. And even today, I actually don't have cable today, but it's a little more freeing in the sense where I look and say, okay, here's the money we have coming in. What would we want to do with that money to the most enjoyment? And we go, you know what? I think we'd rather eat out or go on a vacation than watch cable. And it's just a decision. But I would do things. I mean, I had this really nice king size bedroom. Is it suite or suit? I never know how to say that. But the nice dresser and the headboard and the king size bed. And I sold that. And I got a twin mattress, and I slept on the floor. Sold the nice dining room table and the furniture in the living room. You ever watch Friends where they're sitting in lawn chair furniture in the living room? Yeah, that was me. It's a good thing we weren't married at that time. That might not have flown over really well. But here was the thing. I thought, okay, here's this the expenses going out that I maxed out. And I thought, I've got to do something to get ahead. The money I'm making isn't enough to even meet that. And so I did, you know, what some people would think were kind of radical things. But here's the thing. I mean, I just did that for 2 years. That doesn't mean you have to live the rest of your life. Maybe you like sitting in lawn chair furniture in the living room. That's okay. That's your thing. But the thing is, if you're bleeding, you've got to stop that. And you know, for some of you, the bleeding might just be, yeah, just put a patch on here and go on. Put a Band-Aid on. It's not a huge thing. For me, it was like, it was splurting out everywhere. It's like, put a tourniquet on. You know, I've got to stop the bleeding. And even if I lose that hand, it's better than losing your whole life. And so this may be a short-term thing. Here's the second step. You need to assess your money flow. What do we have? Bible says this in Proverbs 27:23. It says, "Be sure you know the conditions of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds." In other words, do you know what you have? I mean, because I think I have more money than I do. I need to sit down and say, okay, what is it do I have? And there's, I think on the back there's something there where you can, it's pretty simple to figure it out, unless you have really complicated income. You know, you just write down and say, okay, how much comes in each month? What do I pay for taxes? What do I give? That's the amount of money you have to go. Now the trickier part is the outflow, right? Because sometimes it's a little easier to figure out, okay, I know what's coming in, but what's going out? Where do I spend my money? Now, some of it's, you know, big things. You're like, okay, I know what I pay for the mortgage. I know what I pay for rent. But what about other things? Like if I have 4 cappuccinos during the week at $3.50, that adds up to $728 in a year. You know, you think, okay, well, that's a lot. Or 3 Big Macs, you know, when I eat those for dinner. At $4.50, that's $720 a year. So if you eat 3 Big Macs. So these little things add up. And so I would say, you know, if you're in debt, figure out where your money's going. And some of it's not too hard. Some of it is just you take a month, get a receipt for everything you buy, and then you look and you go, oh man, I spend $200 in candy. You know, I hope you don't. Step 3, create. I told you we're going to get super practical, and this is what I did. I walked through this. Step 3, create a spending plan. Once you figure out, you put together this thing called budget. Now for some people, they think that's a terrible word. I think it's a great word. Because then I know what I have. I know what I can spend. I know where things are going. And here's where a lot of people get in trouble. Because sometimes people go, well, I have cash. I have money in the bank. I could spend it. Well, if you look at your budget, you know that next week this bill is due. When Barb and I first got married, we put together a budget, and we put in repairs. Because here's the reality: does anybody here have things that break down? Yeah, does your car ever break down or what? So we put in our budget repairs. We weren't the geniuses behind this. Somebody else told us to account for that, and so we would have that in there. And when the repair comes, that's a normal thing. It happens. It's going to happen. And by the way, at this point in time, I'd actually had paid off my debt. But I was making $15,000 a year, and I know that sounds like a ton of money. but I mean, we were able to pay for those repairs because we planned ahead and we went through. And actually, looking back, I'm surprised at how well we did on what we had, which was really a lot easier because we didn't have the debt. We'd taken care, or at least I had taken care of that issue. None of that was her fault there. So there's things on the back, and do you notice like on the back, like there's percentages? Yeah. Okay. The percentages are kind of what like financial experts are saying. Here's the percentage that you should spend in this given area. By the way, don't go with the banks though, because unless they've changed. I know they've tightened up things because they kind of quit giving out home loans to people that they know can't repay them. But I remember applying for a home loan and they're saying, well, you qualify for this. I'm like, that's insane. I'm going to buy a house at this level because I don't feel like paying back that level. So there's an example. They're talking about housing and utilities, and they have a percentage there, 25-30%. But that's everything. That's your electricity. But see what that does though, is let's say your take home is $3,500 a month. Well, the max that you would want to pay for your housing and what have you is $1,225. And so when you're looking at a house. Or, you know, if you're going to go rent a new place and it's $1,700, you just rule that one out. You say, okay, we got to make some differences here. Entertainment, you can look through. You guys are smart enough with math, right? You could figure out the percentages. You can look and go, okay, if this percentage here is higher than this, where am I going to make a cut? You know, what is it that I can make a cut? Okay, honey, are you good with eating rice and beans and lentils for the next year? No. Okay, so we're going to make a cut over here. So, I mean, what is it that I need to cut there? And the point is, and this is, you know, where you're going. Hey, we're not making it. The outflow is continually more. You got to change something. Something's got to change. I can't continue to spend money I don't have. And that was a hard lesson for me. But here's the thing, because we're talking about our health, our spiritual health with God, our financial health, and you know what the number two reason is for divorce in this country? Money. Money. So this is like one of those things where it's like, okay, we need to deal with this issue. But if you're in debt, you need to plug that in there too. So what's the repayment plan? How am I going to pay this off? What I did with my debt, and again, I wasn't the genius that figured this out, is at the time, I was getting a weekly paycheck, And what I would do is I would take the first two paychecks that I got for the month, and I would set that aside, and I'd say, okay, that's what I'm going to live off of. This next paycheck, I'm going to pay all the bills, and so I would pay, you know, at least the minimum on whatever bill I had with that next check. And then what I would do with the third, fourth, and sometimes the fifth paycheck is I would put every bit of that on the largest loan that I had with the highest interest rate. So if I, you know, you get a $1,000 check or $500, I would send it off to this company, and I would keep doing that until I completely paid off every one of those loans. And what was interesting, because at first, like the first couple of months, is like, man, that just felt horrible. Just wrote out a check to those guys, but what was really, really nice is when I got to the place where I would write the name in my mind was thinking, I will never write that name again. I'm done with that. And it was amazing how things started to snowball where like week one and two, where I'm like, man, there's another $1,000 because I don't have to deal with this. There's this, and it really started to move forward, and it happens when we're intentional. It happens when we remind ourselves that, you know, I was in a place where I was thinking, you know what, God really can't. Well, it's not totally true. I'm thinking theologically here. But I was in this place where I was thinking, okay, God couldn't use me to my full potential because I was dealing with this thing. And then as we move forward, is one of those things where it's like, man, I can actually be generous now because I don't have this extra wagon that I'm carrying. But you got to come up with a spending plan. I mean, even if it's like, yeah, that's crazy, I don't want to do what he said, got to come up with a plan. If you want to go online to find some decent budget plans, there's some up here. Mint.com, youneedabudget.com. That's a great website name. Budgetsimple.com. Go on there, you know, check those out and say, okay, what do I need to do to get this budget going? Step four, start saving. And Scripture talks about this over and over again. And I was kind of like Steve Martin in that video, like, so where do you get this money from, this saving thing that you're talking about? This, I mean, it didn't compute in my world. I'm like, I don't have enough for what I owe. How do I put stuff over here? Proverbs 21:20 says, the wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. Man, that's a rough one. According to the Bible, I was a foolish man. And here's the reality. I think the key to this is to do this regularly. It doesn't have to be one of those things where it's like, what are we going to do with the extra million, hon? You know, what do we do? This 25 bucks, this 50 bucks, you know. Proverbs 13:11 says this, dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money by little makes it grow. And some of it's kind of simple. I mean, I buy two Starbucks a week, $7. If I invest that at 8% over 20 years, $18,000. I mean, we're talking two cups of coffee. $18,000. Go through some more. Okay, here. So when do I start saving? When's the best time to start saving? What's that? Now's a good time? Yeah. There's a Chinese proverb. It says the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is today. And that's a reality. I mean, some of it is like that girl that's sitting there. The best time for you to have figured this out was at the start of the game. But here we are. You know, and the reality is most people that you're going to meet. They're like the dot on the, you know, when you go to the mall and you try to find a place, they're like that dot that, well, I want to be over here, but I'm over here. And so yeah, the best time to have started was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. Step five, start giving. I told you about that. I mean, that was the weirdest thing for me to discover when I started giving that I actually had more money than before. To this day, that blows my mind that I live better the more generous I am than when I was, you know, everything's me. How do I consume this? And it's counterintuitive, but the reality is it sets you free. And this is throughout Scripture. Proverbs 11:24 says, "One man gives freely and becomes more wealthy. Another man is stingy and loses everything." Man, about a living testimony to that. Proverbs 22:9, "A generous man will find himself blessed, for he shares his food with the poor." My favorite's in Malachi. Malachi 3:10. Malachi is that last book right before the New Testament. If you're Italian, you probably call it the Book of Malachi, but it's Malachi, and it says, "That's good. I got one." It says, "Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, so there will be enough food in my temple." And here's what God says: "If you do, says the Lord of Heaven's Army, I will open the windows of heaven for you. I will pour out a blessing so great you won't have enough room to take it in. Try it. Put me to the test." It's the only place in the Bible that says where God says, "Test me on this," which is not usually a good thing, because I've had my parents say, "Try me on this. Test me on this." But it's the reverse here. God says, "I've got a challenge for you. Be generous with what I've given you and see if I don't bless you more than if you held on to that." And so I'm not telling you what to do, but God's offering a wager. See if you want to take God up on that wager. Now, here, let me give you just kind of like a footnote here. Don't take that as like an investment strategy. Like, well, we gave $100 to that, you know, we saw that commercial on TV and we gave money and $100 didn't come in the mail. And gosh darn it, we saw that preacher on TV and he said if we gave $100 would come in the mail the next week. Sometimes God blesses us in different ways, right? I mean, have you ever blessed somebody and just the feeling you get where you... You know, people are like, "Oh, thank you so much." And you're like, "Oh man, it's my pleasure. I mean, I'm just delighted that I was able to help out." And so some of the times that is the return. So how much do we give? What God lays on your heart. How as much as you can. Now I started out, you know, because I was new to this. I didn't grow up, you know, with this thought of, okay, we give to God, we give to his purposes, his works. It wasn't one of those things. And so I started out with 10%. I just, you know, said, okay, that's what God's, you know, said in the Old Testament, what have you. And the New Testament, God tells us to give a couple ways. He says, be generous, give sacrificially, what have you. But I knew for me, like if I didn't have like a baseline, I probably wasn't going to reach that baseline if I didn't have that. What percentage of what we have does God own? All of it, right? And so the goal was to just, you know, to be generous, and one of the things that, you know, and we use that as a baseline because there's times And it's been good as God has blessed us over the years, where we'd say, okay, should we be doing something different? Should we do something else? And you know, should we sponsor that kid in Guatemala, or you know, whatever it is? And the weird thing is we never miss it. We never miss it when we're stepping into what God has for us. So if you didn't catch them all, here they are. Stop spending money you don't have. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, but it was one of those like, this plan is genius. Assess the money flow, create a spending plan, start saving, start giving. And if none of this applies to you, give your notes to your neighbor or what have you. I don't know, maybe they'll get upset. Instead, just say, hey, there's this really good plan online, and we'll send it to you. And don't be too proud. I mean, I went to some godly people because I knew, hey, I can't figure this out. And these guys over here are saying, you know, they had this bankruptcy deal and it worked out well for them and what have you. You know, what should I do? I don't know how to do a budget. I don't know how to do this. But I can give you some recommendations. I can connect you with some people. Here's an illustration. This is great because sometimes we talk about wealthy people. We already know we're wealthy, but like ridiculously wealthy people. Like, hey, Bill Gates gave away $1 billion. Like, I mean, and that's great, and I appreciate that. But like, there's no sacrifice in that. I mean, it's just a reality. If he gave away like $90 billion, he'd feel it a little bit. But there's this lady, she's 87 years old, and. She did laundry her whole life. And she became famous in this community that she was a part of in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And for decades, she earned 50 cents per load of washing one family's laundry. And she did it the old-fashioned way on the scrub board, what have you. And over the years, she would put... she'd put away money. She would slowly invest that money, and when she retired, she went to the bank and she was astonished because she never really looked at what she was putting there, and she was astonished that she had $150,000 in the bank. This is a lady making 50 cents per load of laundry, and she came to the. She came to the place where she said, I don't need anything. And she started a college fund for poor women that wanted to attend college. Could you imagine that? There's people getting an education in Hattiesburg, Mississippi because a lady that made 50 cents doing laundry that slowly put some aside. And she was interviewed in the newspaper. And they asked her why she did it, and she said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. She said, I've used money for myself, and I've used it for others. Here's the point of that. God created you and I to be generous. I believe God has called you and I, and He has placed us where He has placed us to make a difference. And I think this is one of those issues where we got to look and go, okay, we got to get this issue right. We got to get this right because God has called us to make a difference in our community, and by God's grace, let's make a difference in this community. We're going to stand. We're going to close out. But if God's working in your heart on something, and you're looking, going, okay, yeah, this is an issue I got to deal with. I would today say, okay, God, what's my next step? What is my next step? What do you want me to do, God? Because it's all about you. And how do I glorify you in this area of my life?